This is the Ignition Point, Clayton Bradley Academy's podcast, where every day we work to help students excel through critical thinking, problem solving, collaboration, and use of our lifelong guidelines and life skills. Today's podcast is the beginning of a two-part series where we're going to be discussing how Harkness is used in our humanities, which is English and history classes for our upper school. To do that, we have three different teachers sitting down. So the first is Stephen Otis. He's a 6th and 7th grade history teacher. We have Josh Riggins, which teaches history in the high school classrooms. And we have Scott Hussey, which teaches English in the high school classrooms. So at this time, we join the podcast with your host, Kendall Terry. We'd like to welcome to the podcast today a bigger group than I think I've ever done outside of recording with just the 8th grade last year for the podcast. And I'm excited about that. So we've got Stephen Otis, Scott Hussey, and Josh Riggins. And they are here to talk about a thing that we do a lot in the humanities department, but it does spill over into other departments as well, an idea called Harkness. And so, Scott, I think we were actually on a professional development trip. It was a thing about project-based learning.
PBL.
And we were in a room, and I don't even remember exactly how the conversation started. You might, but there was another school there that was talking about this Harkness.
Yeah, it was a Christian school from Dallas, Texas.
Yeah.
And I was started asking them how they handled controversial texts, right? Any text that a parent might want to, you know more about, right?
Yeah,
like,
absolutely.
how do they present it? And especially because they indicate at some point that their community was a conservative community, right? Socially conservative community. And they brought up Harkness to me. And I asked them what it was. And Becca Wolfbarger, our former principal, was there with us as well. And we talked about it. And I came back from the conference knowing a little bit about PBL and having a huge hunger to learn more about whatever Harkness was. And so I spent a good amount of time Google researching it. And then I don't know when, but I got the training, I think, a year later. Like,
yeah,
I after the training for that summer, they were full. And Brad, Mr. Rasmussen, our former principal, we got in for the next year, for the following year. And the training itself at Exeter was amazing. It was some of the best training I've had in education, you know, from university to other, like, different types of stuff. Like, it was thorough, it was engaging. A lot of the other educators there were really involved. It felt collegial, and I realized the power that it had in our classroom. And I came back from that training the next year just ready to fully implement it in CBA.
Yeah.
And also starting to get making sure that Josh got training and then Sarah got training for it as well.
Yeah. You know, it's one of those that when you go to a conference of sometimes the gems you take home are not actually what the conference was about.
Totally.
Sometimes it's, oh, I was in this conversation with a person and they told me about this and now I've got to go explore that idea. And that was one, you know, I think we learned a lot at that conference. There were several of us there, but the Harkness is the one thing that I think probably made the biggest impact to our school community just through that side conversation with the school out of Dallas. So
it's had the most lasting effect, right?
Yeah.
I mean, because that also even goes into when Stephen was applying, he had on his CV Harkness. And so in some of the early conversations that we had, we even talked about it, right?
Our first conversation on Zoom, we brought up Harkness because we both loved that pedagogy.
Yeah.
And I was so excited to see that you were already doing it. And I was like, oh, this is the place.
Right.
I was like, oh, this is so great. It's already there. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, yeah, I mean, you can see its effect even down the road from, like, hiring a decade later from me attending that point. Mm-hmm. It's become an identity, at the very least, within the humanities in the upper school, right? So this is the middle school and high school.
Absolutely. And there are other teachers we could have had here at the table. You know, we try to have Sarah here, she had a conflict on the schedule, and, but there are other teachers that are also trying to implement more and more of Harkness. I know Nicole does a decent amount of that with the 8th grade as well, and so it's from really 6th grade up for sure that they encounter classes, but even in some of our lower school classes, they start looking at what can we implement that kind of helps set them up for these kind of conversations. I know you were talking about it in PD the other day with our staff, and, you know, just continuing to help people understand there's a lot of power and validity in helping students be able to talk in this way, help students be able to process in this way. So I think let's start by, we've given a little bit of a background of how it got here, but let's give a little bit of background of Harkness itself. So all three of you have done training. You also have done training at Phillips Exeter?
Yes, okay. Yes.
So all three of you have gone to Phillips Exeter. That's an independent school in the New England area, and received training there. That's kind of where Harkness was birthed as part of, it was like a philanthropic donation that kind of pushed that.
Yeah, it was someone who was a part of Standard Oil. He was on the C-suite team of Standard Oil back in the day, and then he used his windfall from, you know, monopolistic practices.
They like doing
world.
That, didn't they?
How do you feel about that monopolistic practice?
How paternalistic. No, but so he used that, and he was a student that was never going to be the one to sit in front and answer questions quickly, right? And he saw that it had hampered his education, and he didn't want that to happen for other students like him who knew what they were saying, but sometimes they either took a moment, right, or they wanted the ideas to be processed first by others. They were more reticent to speak, but he didn't want, you know, those students are not rewarded in the same way, right, the first to speak is. And so his first thought was, let's reorient the room so it's not the sage on the stage, which at Phillips Exeter, you know, which is like an Ivy League feeder school, they actually, the professors, the teachers, taught on stages,
literally,
right? Yeah, like it was a raised platform with a podium and a chalkboard.
They earned it, by golly.
That's right. And so he started to reorient it, and Phillips Exeter really took on the pedagogy like whole cloth.
Yeah,
right. Like the whole school slowly adopted it more than just humanities. Like it went into their math departments and their science department. Like it is the backbone of that educational institution.
Yeah. Wow.
Right. And because of...
And not overnight. There were struggles with faculty. Yeah. They're like, wait, what is this? Like, I'm not used to this style. It's new. And
They had to work
especially
it out.
Outside of the humanities, sometimes it can be a struggle. Or, like, especially with, like, faculty who are used to, you know, their entire pedagogy is based around that. You have a chalkboard and you have a podium and you stand up there and they push back against it. Absolutely.
Well, I mean, education as a whole is built on that backbone of the person in the room is the smartest person in the room. And I'm going to extol this wisdom to you. And as I do this, you're going to soak it in and absorb it, right? And then as you leave, you're going to now be enlightened. And so to have that transition at a school that had the prestige, had the reputation of you come here and you will get into the Ivy Leagues, you will get into those higher academic institutions, I imagine that was a complete philosophical debate, probably internally and externally at a school that was going on. I think the adaptation of it coming here was probably a lot easier because we, from the very beginning, said we don't want to be that sage on the stage. We want to be a facilitator of the learning, but we understand that there are smarter people sometimes other than the teacher that needs to help with this information.
Well, I think that's helpful as well. We had a couple of students in those first couple of classes, one in particular that I'm thinking about, but I realized I was not the smartest person in the room when this student was in the room. I was just, you know, 25 years older.
Right.
30 years older than this person.
Maybe a little wiser, life-wise, life experience. We're trying to dive into your secrets.
But the ability to have them share and also hear their peers share. We were also talking about how do we have authentic student learning at the time, right? And how do we have integrated discipline in the humanities and other classes? Oh, actually, we had integration as often as we could.
Yep.
And this I saw as a model for us as a way for me to step back, right, and to allow student learning to be centered, for the students to share with me the connections they were making rather than me create these connections and let it be echoed back to me, right?
Yeah.
And so it seems like it really satisfied a lot of the things we were looking for at the very beginning, right? Yeah. Like for when we were reimagining education, and me not exactly knowing what that meant, right? How do you do that?
Well, yeah, I was a first year teacher, so for me, I was like, well,
Josh is coming in right out of UT. Well,
what even is education?
Right.
So I didn't
hard to reimagine it when you're not sure what it is.
Yeah, yeah. So I just kind of
all the students.
And I think that's one of the things that we talk about a lot of it is a important part of our model here is that we want to reimagine education. That sounds great. It looks pretty on a wall.
Mm-hmm. It's a great slogan.
Yeah. When you get into doing it, though, it's messy. It's hard. And there's mistakes. And I feel like that this model of Harkness and that discussion style allows that to take place in a genuine way in the classroom. Because the conversation can be changed from one class to the next. The points that are going to be brought out can be changed from one class to the next. And it allows you as a teacher then to adapt to those kids and say, well, let's go down this path if this is the path you're wanting to go down. And I am sitting in the room as the complete novice. I've only seen this with classes that I've observed you guys do. I never taught it myself.
Well, I would say also, since we have a standards-based approach as well, the Common Core career and college readiness standards, whatever you want to call them, within English, they have what are called the SL, speaking and listening standards. Mm-hmm. And a lot of those standards are not necessarily stand and deliver speaking and listening. They're not performance, right, or speeches. They are propel a conversation, listen to different opinions, right? Like come to class prepared and ready to speak on, right? Yeah. And so even our standards themselves, which was new to me at the time, how do I grade on standards? Even our standards were aligned so that they worked really well with Harkness, or at least that section of our standards. And so I knew if I have to cover this year after year, these speaking and listening standards, like how do I do that outside of presentations? And Harkness allowed me to have a regular grade in that area, and also allowed me to assign a lot of text, really, right? Or know that I can sign a book every quarter, right? Because of our schedule, and we'll get something accomplished no matter what, right? Yeah. The conversations, right?
Even the art and skill of conversation at the table, if you haven't fully read that text or just kind of skimmed it, when you sit at the table and you hear other people asking questions, referring to text and diving in and thinking about ideas, even if you haven't read it, you're going to learn something about it. Mm-hmm. That's one of the valuable things about Harkness. And then you're also going to, I've seen students, like, when they're not ready after the first Harkness they have, they literally, I could see it on their face, go, boy, I got to be ready next time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because you can't hide anywhere. Mm-mm. And people are going to be asking you questions, and you're going to be expected to engage in some way. You know? So it's great accountability without, like, trying to always be on. It's like peer accountability. You know?
Right. Well, that old model of what would you do as a teacher, you might start the day with a quiz.
A reference quiz.
Yeah, right. Like you obviously didn't read because you failed the quiz. Well, failing the quiz still just tells me that they didn't read.
Right.
I mean, it still doesn't help them know the text any better. Mm-hmm. Or now they're starting to read for like what kind of question might come up on a quiz that I can get right. Or, you know, the teacher was just trying to trick me into missing one. I did read and it was a trick question, you know. But it kind of takes that out of are you going to be part of the class? Are you going to be part of the community? Which is what we're trying to teach as a student at CBA is you're a part of a community here, and your place in that community is valuable. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things I love hearing you guys talk about with Harkness is that voice of everybody has that seat at the table. Mm-hmm. And every seat at the table is equal importance, right? Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. It's needed. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I need your voice to help me learn because I can only see my perspective. So I need you to see your perspective. I need to listen to it if I'm going to think deeper and more whole and more full and be more creative, you know?
How many times in a young person's life do people ask them to hear their voice?
I know, right?
Like, I don't remember ever, like an adult ever asking for my opinion on something like that outside of like calling on me in class, you know, maybe once a month or something.
Yeah.
But with this, you have the opportunity as a student to say what's on your mind about something very specific. And I think that's just such a valuable skill to have. The other thing that I was thinking about was the way, like, you know, you talked about, Stephen, how even if you haven't read the text, you know, a student can, you know, still absorb a lot of that information and engage with the conversation. On the other side, though, like, students who have read the text and who are, you know, reading it and annotating their text and really engaging with it on a personal level, when they get into those conversations, it's this immediate source of, like, really good feedback, because if you throw something out there and nobody responds, that's telling you something about, you know.
They missed that comment. Point. I think that's, Josh, to your point, I don't have to explain why I assign a text anymore, right? There's never this, like, justification for why we're reading this. The justification itself occurs from the students, right? Like, they understand. Like, right now we're reading 1984. The other day in class, I asked, why are we still reading this book 75 years later, right? We don't see necessarily communism or fascism or authoritarianism in the same way.
Right.
Why are teachers still assigning this? And I could just ask that, and the students understand it because of how we've come to the conversation multiple times and looking at the different chapters of the book. So I think it justifies itself too. I don't know how that works necessarily in social studies in comparison to English.
I mean, I'm trying to think of, like, a time when I've given students, like, a primary source or even just, like, a summary of a particular event, and there's been, like question, like, why are we studying this? Especially when we're in a unit where we're doing a lot of discussions. And I can't think of really any point when they've done that, especially when we're discussing it in class and they're finding that meaning for themselves as a group.
Today, when I was at the library on a field study, I was talking to a parent and they asked me about Harkness, and I said the word Harkness back, like, oh, well, Harkness is this thing, you know. And one of my students in the room popped her head up. She goes, are we going to have a Harkness? And I was like, oh, no, not right now, but we will soon, you know, like when we get back to school, you know. And she's like, I love Harkness. And that was so, that was just like music to a teacher. Like, I love it when we get to have conversations. And I can tell when the students really start having a good conversation and more get involved, like, it's releasing dopamine. it makes them happy. Like, they're like, well, this is, what, why was that so fun? And I've had them ask me that. And I was like, because you had a really good conversation and you were a vital part of it. And that feels good because you're connecting with other humans.
Yeah.
And you're making, this is like, it's also friendship. It's also learning. It's also research. It's like, this is life happening at the table.
Yeah, it's
reading. And you feel it.
Read the room too, right?
Or you're, like, reading body language. You're training them to do that.
And it's a great way.
Super engaged.
It's a great way of, I don't want to say tricking, but tricking them into loving and engaging with and connecting with, you know, texts. Old texts, people from, you know, decades and hundreds of years ago, because they're feeling connected to their peers, and some of that is going to imprint on, you know, whatever thing they're reading and discussing at that moment.
Even if they don't like the text, right? It's sometimes it's almost more fun when they, or at least half, don't like whatever I assign, and they'll come to class even more prepared just because they want to, like, skewer this text and point out all its flaws and talk about how the author's using all sorts of fallacious reasoning or whatever, right? And so even texts that they don't like, you get engagement with just because they know they're going to have an opportunity to air their grievances, right, with it.
Yeah.
And at the end, they almost feel, like, justified, right? Like, I don't like that you're assigning this, but I'm going to read it and I'm going to tell you why. And I get to hear, like, right then and there, you know, their feelings and thoughts on the text. And, you know, as long as they use evidence, perfect.
You also get to know their personalities. Mm-hmm. You get to know them as people. And then so when you're having conversations just throughout the day, like, there's just a deeper connection that you have with your student, and relationship is so vital and important in what we do. And so it's a method that just, it naturally gives you more connection.
Yeah, you can...
And awareness.
You can kind of bird walk sometimes in conversations, right? Yeah. Or you can do like whole class kind of joking around. Yeah. And since you're sitting at the table with the students... Right, like you can, you know, you can make a comment on someone, something said or whatnot, and everyone laughs, and then like another student will point something else at, and so you build those, like, it's very casual. It seems like
a, build rapport,
relationship and rapport, and you can have fun. And 30 minutes while discussing a text can go by very quickly.
Yeah.
I know my students know me, and we've now analyzed something together.
This has been The Ignition Point, Clayton Bradley Academy's podcast, where every day we work to help students excel through critical thinking, problem solving, collaboration, and use of our lifelong guidelines and life skills. If you'd like to find out more about our school, you can join us on our webpage, www.claytonbradleyacademy.org, or find us on social media at CBASTEM or at Clayton Bradley Academy. We will be coming out with a part two of this conversation where we continue to dive into Harkness and how it's used in our classrooms. We hope you have a wonderful day.